God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Well, this is special. Monday night, wide open meetings of a couple of groups of Alcoholics Anonymous. Gee, that's a beautiful sight, I tell. My name is Coley Clayton Kim, and I have an incurable illness, and it was caused by too much fruit of the vine. In short, we have to be honest. I am an alcoholic, but I'm sober tonight through no fault of my own, but by that wonderful gift of God that we call grace. And He used people in that gift to help me to stay sober. I am your so-called chairman tonight on this wonderful occasion. First thing I want to say is, happy birthday, Aunt Mark. Boy, don't you know Aunt Mark ahead of time. There you go. Great, goodness alive. Isn't it wonderful that we laugh at ourselves? Wonderful to be able to laugh at ourselves. You know these smart idiots, the scientists, and all these folks that put men on the moon. All these smart people, they do all that and they can't tell us what takes place when a person laughs. Just that simple, but they don't know what takes place. So we must be supposed to do that. I tell you right now, you know, we welcome our members of the Georgia State Patrol, Sheriff's Department, and Police Department. If they have to be here tonight. I want to welcome all of this, regular members, all the good people who come tonight to share this wonderful occasion. Sweetheart of the Custom Group's 18th anniversary of the birthday of sobriety, continued sobriety. What I mean without slip. We call her the sweetheart of the cut group. Later on, you know, we got some princess. We hear from her later on tonight. But I guess we still call the sweetheart of the cut group. AA preamble, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Y'all come right on in. We were waiting for you. We always have to have members of the clergy with us tonight. And it's certainly good to have folks with us tonight. Right in. We were waiting for you. You see these people out there supporting our honorees tonight. It's customary book of Alcoholics Anonymous. No one asked Ray if he will to come up and read how it works. My name is Ray Barton, I'm an alcoholic. You know, I want to say a couple of words before I get into it. I came out of Tennessee back in 1970. And one of the things I didn't understand was how in the world a bunch of drunk men ever getting out associated with a bunch of drunk women. It was just unheard of me. It was just foreign to my nature. I didn't understand. I started off over there in Newport. We had a gal over there who she was probably on a mission. She was an alcoholic. And this lady had as much to do with my sobriety as any man in the AA group in Newport. That's wrong. She married him. I appreciate it. Later on, it's my privilege to meet another gal who has some drinking problems. And she says that we had a little bit to do with her sobriety. I doubt that, seriously. And she's become one of my dearest friends in this wonderful program, Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's you. When I was attending these meetings over in Cuthbert, I used to sit back there on the back row, and sometimes I opened my mouth. I didn't talk too much, I don't know about the king. But I always noticed this beautiful young lady sitting up there about the second row from the front on the left hand side. I became very attached to this lady. And she doesn't know it, but she's been an awful lot in my sprite. you know, they talk about the fringe benefits you get out of this program. And I tell you, one of the dearest things I've done. It's in the friendship and love of you, and I sure appreciate it. This is a portion of a big book, first chapter of Big Book, entitled How It Works. Rather, we've seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recall are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple problem. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They are such important. They are not at fault they seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. They change are less than average. They have those too who suffer from great emotional and mental disorder, but many of them do recover as they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. And some of these we bought. We thought we could find an easy and soft way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and it was up with nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling poverty. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power, and that one is God, and may you find him now. Half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point. He has his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God if we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all the persons we had harmed and came willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when they do so within to them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11,
all through prayer and meditation, to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, and tried to carry this message to alcoholics, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaim one another, "I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. Do not sink. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are God's progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholics and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could ever leave our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if He was sought.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Rick. You know, June is the oldest member in sobriety, but you have a sobriety in our group member. She's my sponsor now. All the rest of them passed on away. But I'm glad June's staying around. I'm going to tell you, I need her. I'll tell you, I need June. All of them. Let's see, now we've got the 12 traditions. We always ask members of AA to read. I'm going to ask Pop there to come up with you.
Thanks, Clayton. This time, 5 years ago about now, me and Miss Judy was coming in home with crybaby. You only heard me tell that. And in the morning, about 3 o'clock 5 years ago, I saw something had to be done. I knew I had done going the length of my rope, that if I live, I had to do different than what I do. And June, you have been a big help to me. And thank you for letting me live. This is 12th edition. I am Clarence Brown. I'm an alcoholic. This is 12th edition. Our common welfare should come first. Purpose of recovery is upon AA unit. Number 2, for our group purpose, they have one ultimate authority. The loving God may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are the trusted servants. They do not go. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matter affecting the other group or AA as a whole. 5, each group has one primary purpose, to carry the message to alcoholics who still suffer. 6, an AA group will never endorse financial in the AA name of any related facility or outside enterprise. This problem of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully supporting, self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special work. 9, AA as such ought never be organized. But we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality. Thank you, Clayton.
Thank you, Tom. This time we're going to get to the announcement, and I have one to make for heaven.
Georgia Methodist here. Pastor Coleman, member, please. Pick one of them up, Georgia Methodist. What other now?
Pick high and one like to make people meet.
For quite a while, he's been talking about starting a Saturday night group at Olive. And for the last 2 weeks, last two Saturday nights, we've had a meeting at a number home. And tried real well. I think 25 one night, and last Saturday night, and 35. And so the two Saturday was there, and we had a need for a meeting in our ear on Saturday night. We are starting this coming Saturday night at 8 o'clock. We have a meeting place. Me with the old meeting place on the left, down about 3 doors. Coming from the south across the track, the third door up to the store stop. At 8 o'clock, and Bob is from Oregon, and we are speaking. He is our area committee. Don't let the Friday night, please come to the Friday night meeting. We still have a meeting on Friday night. It's still with me and Maggie for the Saturday night meeting. Come on down and come down here on Saturday night. This coming Saturday night at 8 o'clock. We're looking for it.
Thank you. Open meeting in honor of Friday night.
On April 5th, we have my birthday and new baller, Robert Dutton. You're all come.
He's closed in late, but Thursday.
Last call. Last night, celebrate my 5th. Fred S. and Gene Dudley. All come again.
Is it 8 o'clock?
Yes, 8 o'clock.
Any other name? Well, we're getting down now to important part of our program. I asked Jim if she wanted to introduce her. I think that she's been having a little trouble. She's improved. She looks a lot better. And we might have happened that she's getting along with her kids. She asked me to introduce her to the
people. I said, I didn't be there too.
You know, several years ago, I can't remember just how many years. And two fellas come up here one night. Two little jumper fellas, you know, come down through there. Well, I can remember one of the names, you know, Bill, that's a common name. Well, Pop here, the daddy, he didn't want to come that night. And they come on up, and you know a fella initialed, you know the initial JT, you hear that a lot. That's good to remember. Now I have trouble with names, but we got down, and I don't know what I ever heard of the name, what he was called by. You know, even a fella in the paper tonight, his name is 10-8. That's his name, legal name, 10-8. Well, I didn't know. He told me a name, and I don't know, it didn't register. I just never heard those initials before. But I know when I got home that night, turned on television, and there was a commercial come on. And I couldn't think of that fellow's name. I just couldn't think of it to save my life. But that program, that commercial, there was something there that I thought, well, that's part of his initials. So I kept trying to remember his initials. But tonight I'm so happy. I am so happy. And let's think about that commercial to introduce this guy tonight. He's solid AA. He's been around. He goes. He is AA. And I'm going to give you WHP. Come on, WHP. Thank you,
Clay. Not too hard learning that name. I've been called all kinds of things, so anything you call me is all right. I'm W.H. Phelps, and I'm an alcoholic. And happy birthday to you. Clayton said he's glad always to have a clergy here. And he said that for my benefit. Because he wants me to have my joke cleaned up by the time I got up there. I know he didn't come up behind the blind. But I don't ever tell a joke I wouldn't tell my mom or my wife. Now they ain't eating, so whatever I tell, they both said that I haven't gone yet. So before I get into this thing, I have got a couple of little ones that I want to tell. This fella walked into this drugstore and he asked the druggist, he said, "I want to know what you said to my wife this morning to hurt her feelings so bad." He said, "She was tore up, she was crying when I came home, and I want to know what you said." He said, "Fella, I was in the drugstore here this morning, and I punched the button on my cash register and the drawer flew flam out. And all of my money fell down there on the floor. And I was down there picking up my money. And the phone started ringing. And I started to get up and answer the phone and I bumped my head on the counter hard. And so when I said hello, it was your wife. And she asked me how to use a rectal thermometer. And buddy, I told her." And there was two nuns walking through the park. One of them was white and one of them was black. And it was at night. And two men attacked them. And the white nun said, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." The nigger nun said, "This will do." That's all right, I don't know. I'm an alcoholic and I'm very grateful to be here tonight. Jim asked me to come talk at her birthday almost a year ago, and I've looked forward to it ever since. And that's just one of the blessings, and it's the top of the list that I've had since I came to this program in 1969. To speak at a lovely lady like June's 18th birthday. That's a long time to be sober, June. 18 years. Bless you. There was a point in my life that, and Clayton said that there was two fellas coming, two young men coming down here. And it was me and my brother, and we were both alcoholics. For about 20 years, my mama would stand over me, and I'd be drunk, and she'd say, "W.H., why can't you drink like your daddy?" And I never could do it. So finally, I couldn't drink like him, so he started drinking like me. And there was a time in our lives that either I'd be all drunk or I'd be sober and doing good and Bill would be drunk and I'd be vice versa. We never did get drunk too much at the same time. But to show you how low how your folks can feel about you when you're just doing so sorry. My daddy said one time that the devil owed him a debt and paid him off with two of the damn sorest boys. But I'm an alcoholic and I'm happy with life. I'm happy all the time. I have living problems. Everybody has living problems. But through this program and through the spiritual part of the program, it makes them a whole lot easier than I think. Back in about 1956, I had a little fertilizer business in Baker County, and I was sitting there in it, and I was pretty bad. Liquor had whooped me. And I was sitting there in my office one morning, and it was 10 o'clock probably, and I was drinking Budweiser. Now, I wasn't drinking this Budweiser to be sociable with anybody, because didn't nobody else have a Budweiser except me. And I was drinking it because I had the shakes, and I was jittery, and I felt bad, and I was trying to live. And I thought that my life that morning depended on that Budweiser, because I had to get my business leveled off. And my line of thinking about this time was that, well, most all good businessmen promise to have a Budweiser at 10 o'clock in the morning. Nothing wrong with that. And there was a man walked in my office, and for pure manners, I asked him to have a beer. And manners was the only reason, mind you, because I didn't have enough to spare nobody. I wanted what I had, and I needed. But he told me one of the craziest things I ever heard a grown man say. He said, "No, thank you, I can't drink, I'm an alcoholic." And I said to myself, what a pity. You know, and that's a shame. Big grown man that's afflicted in such a way as that. Can't even drink a little old Budweiser. I said, I believe I'll get up and have me another. I can drink them. So he told me a few events of his life. He told me about trading the only weight that he had to ride off 3 different times. Now, the way that came about, his brother-in-laws, he had 2 brother-in-laws, and they'd buy him some kind of old pickup truck and get him a job where he'd have a way to go back and forth to work. 3 different times he traded the only way he had to go off for whiskey and walked home. Went home one night with 5 fifths of liquor and an IOU for 5 more that he could go back and get. Now that must have been a good, secure feeling. To have 5 fifths of liquor under your arm and an IOU from the bootmaker for 5 more fifths to balance on your pickup truck. Now, I made it back. And he left my office, and I sat there and made him drink another beer, and I took his inventory very carefully. I said, you know, that's a heck of a shape for a man to get himself into an alcoholic. I said, well, it takes all kind of people to make up the world. And just some people can't handle this stuff, and then there's some of us that can. And I said, well, it's a pity, I guess, for a man to be in that shape. But if I ever work to become an alcoholic, I'm not going to go all over the country and I'm not going to tell everybody I'm no alcoholic. But that's the worst word that I ever heard in my life. An alcoholic. Boy, there's some bad things I'd rather you had a call with me than that. But I went on for 3 more years of hard drinking after this. And they were hard, too. People say something about, well, you know, anybody can stay drunk, but that just ain't so. You got to work at it. You know, you got to have some way or another to get some money, you know, to buy whiskey with. Biggest fear I had for those 3 years was to get without whiskey and not have no way to get any. I don't think I ever got that shape. Somehow or another, somebody take a check and hold it on me, or, you know, I'd bounce one or something. But I'd get some liquor. But I had to have it. When I was an alcoholic. And a lot of people just got the attitude that you're just sorry. And there ain't no help for you. You're going to be a drunk all your life. And then there's some few people like my wife was at one time thought I was all having fun. Remember one time I come in with a bottle of liquor and I said, "Him, I can take a drink of this liquor." She sipped it. Yes. I said, "Yeah, you thought I'd been all having fun, didn't you?" But I was an alcoholic. Once I took a drink of liquor, I couldn't control anything but drink. I lost all willpower, all will to reason. The most important thing in my life was to drink. And in this 3-year period that I'm talking about, I couldn't stay drunk all the time because there ain't no way a man can stay as drunk as I can get all the time because he'd have died for sure. So I'd have to have little periodic sobering up spells, and I'd have to stay sober for 3 weeks and 4 weeks sometime, and I done started making hospitals. I made the hospital for alcohol that January. Before I came into this program on March of 1969, I had got sick, I got down, I went to my doctor's house. And me and this doctor had drank a thousand gallons of, together, I guess. And I went to his back door and I told him that I was sick, that I couldn't come off this liquor, I had to have some help. And he called the hospital and he says, fix up the room for Ted Gates and send him down there and give him this and give him that and put him to bed. I remember I started out of that doctor's house that night, and he said, "Ted Gates, what you going to have this time?" And I remember I said, "Well, let's try the homegrown food that we talked about." Well, that's what I came out of the hospital on my record was, homegrown food. Now, we was treated for alcoholism, but it's a funny thing. Out of about 8 or 10 times in our hospital, I was treated identically for various bugs and intestinal disorders and gastritis. I had that a half a dozen times. With ulcerated stomachs and this and that and other. And it's surprising how much better my stomach has gotten since I left liquor home. But anyway, I went in the hospital that night. This was in 1969. And I had 2 pints of liquor, one in each front pocket of my coat over in January. I wasn't fixing to be confined in no hospital room without no booze. So I was a good, smart alcoholic. Most alcoholics are tremendously brilliant. So up there in the place where you hang your clothes was a quilt up there. So I stuck 1 pint on that quilt and I put 1 under my mattress. So if they caught me, I'd have a deep going. So sure enough, about 15 minutes, the nurse came down and said, "Dead Gates, don't you have some liquor in the room?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I got a little cotton in here." She said, "Well, you know you can't keep it in here. Now give it to me and let me get it done the test." So I went over and got that one out from under that blanket up there where you hang your clothes. And I hand it to her. She said, "Now, if you just got to have a drink, just press that buzzer there hanging on your pillow, and I'll fix you one and bring it to you." I said, "Here, wait, get this other bottle covered." And that's the first time I found out for certain that there ain't no way you can put no dependence and wasn't no nurse to it. And I let me lock in down. I walked up forward, I cried, and I hollered, and I drank mouthwash. I drank 3 bottles of mouthwash. Because it just sat on the side of it, 12% alcohol by volume or something. And I drank down, just tossed off me 3 bottles, and I go from room to room, stealing. Pitiful, sick. That's sick. Well, I went on another big bad drunk, and this is the drunk of all drunks, I guess. I was, this was in March, the first part of March or the latter part of February, I don't know, I don't remember. But I was having a little old drying up spell, and I'd been dry for a while, and I told my wife, I said, "Sugar, we're going to drink liquor a little different." I am. I said, "On Saturday night, man, nothing but Saturday night. I'm going to ride down to Frank's and I'm going to get me a half a pint. And I'm going to drink that half pint and I'm going to come home and eat supper and go to bed." And you know I'd done that Saturday night. Went down there and got a half pint and drank it and drove straight home and ate supper. Went to bed. But what I didn't know about alcoholism was triggering that compulsion. So the next Friday I came by that liquor store. And I didn't have any reason to go by that liquor store. Just casually drove up and parked and got out of my truck. And I just happened to have a big pan full of catfish, and they was fixing to have catfish, cooked catfish, and I love catfish. And I said, "Well, since y'all asked me to stay and eat catfish," I said, "bring me a half a pint." And that started it. I got on a drunk. I stayed on a drunk about 3 weeks. And it was about 13 days that I was totally lost. I don't even know what happened. I remember that I was down on Notchaway Creek and I was passed out one time. I always have to tell this. Because my dad saved my life and I want to tell this. Down on Notchaway Creek, passed out, drunk in an old house that they had for a little clubhouse down there. And they drank liquor and played poker and I got drunk, couldn't leave, so I went to sleep. Somebody called my folks and told them I was down there, might better come get me. Somebody might knock me in the head and rob me. If they'd robbed me first, they'd have sure knocked me in the head. But I didn't have nothing. came down there and woke me up. I heard him calling my name, and I looked up. That was my mom and daddy. And my dad told my mama, said, you drive the car, my mama will drive, pick up, drive him home. Well, I wanted some sympathy, you know. I was down. I wanted somebody to feel sorry for me. So I began to have a pity party, and I was wonderful at having pity parties. And there was another thing that I was great at, and that was daydreaming. I could dream about killing myself, you know, and committing suicide, and I could just see my funeral in my mind, just how many going to be a multitude of people there, you know. And I could just see what they was doing, you know, crying and carrying on and whispering and saying, well, he was a pretty good fellow, this and a pretty, you know how it goes. You know about how sorry you are. They always want to keep you around the COVID. I just daydream and do all this stuff, and I just want my dad to feel sorry for me. We'd ride along there. I was sitting up there. I know I was pretty. And I told him I done got too sorry to live, but I was going to kill myself. And y'all know what he said. He turned and looked across that moon in that pickup truck, and he said, it'd be a damn blessing if you could. But that's just kind of how it was. Well, I did this, and then in March, I was trying to sober up. I finally landed home. I was so sick, I didn't even know what. I couldn't even do nothing. I couldn't eat nothing. I couldn't even make a cup of coffee. Y'all all seen how full I could scatter a spoonful of instant coffee. When I come out of that coffee jar, I couldn't even keep a sheet on my stomach, let alone water in it. I was just sick. And I was walking the floor, and I just, oh, you ain't never seen a man in that bad shape. My mama, she's a good Al-Anon and always full of good first-class advice. And she come down there to the house, and she saw what kind of shape I was in, and she gave me some of the best advice that I ever had in my life. She said, Douglas, why don't you take you a stand back? I could have held them back in Tennessee. I think that's where they make them at. They wouldn't have done me a good deal. But I got on the phone and I called this man that had come by my place of business about 3 years prior to this. He told me he was an alcoholic. And I called him and I asked him, could he come help me? Because this man had planted a seed in my mind that had rooted. And his curiosity, along with my killing myself, they had outweighed each other, and I had to seek and find out some more information about what this man was doing to stay sober. Because I had just about as much as I could take. It was rough. And I called Curtis, and I asked Curtis, would he come help me? And he said, I'd be glad to. Sounds so enthused about it that I got the impression that he was trying to tell me I've been waiting on you. And looking back over it now, I believe that's how come he come by my office that day, meddling in my business. Somebody tipped him off that I was up there drinking too much. But I knew I didn't have no problem with no alcohol at that time. If it was just people would get off my back and let me alone, I could work this thing out. That was my problem. Folks bothered me. Liquor wasn't my problem, Clayton. Anything but to be honest with yourself, you know. Well, he drove up in my yard, and I watched for a night through the window, and I was going to go out and get his truck with him because I didn't want him coming in my house around my wife and tell him talking like I knew he was going to talk, but I done heard him say he was an alcoholic, and I knew he was going to come in my house and say the same thing. I didn't want nothing talking around my wife and children as bad as that. I went out there that man's truck and sat down, and he told me one of the strangest things that I ever heard. He said, Doug Yates, God loves you and he don't want you in this shape. And you know, I hadn't thought about that and nobody hadn't told me that. But I figured that folks had been telling me how sorry I was. And I was, Billy. You can't make nothing out of a drunk, but a sorry drunk, but he ain't sometimes always necessarily drunk on his own accord. Except we all know if he left the bottle, let him stop in the bottle, he wouldn't be having that problem.
But for an alcoholic to stop drinking along with that he's got, ain't no way he can do it hardly on his own. He's got to be motivated. He's got to be helped by some power power. Call it whatever you make. I choose to call my power power God. And I know that he's there anytime I need to help me. And I know that if I wake up first thing in the morning and I say, God, help me get through this day. And then I know before I go to bed that night, if I'm thanking for it, I know that I'm on the right track. I never have seen too many people slip in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I ask them one little simple question. Did you pray the morning that you got drunk? And they always said no, if they were honest. I hadn't prayed for a week before the program. Lost contact with high power. It's got to be spiritual. You can't stay sober on your own because you have the right will, power, and you can do it. Not if you're an alcoholic. The first thing pops in our mind, we go to stinking thinking, thinking stinking, and whatever you want to call it. And then somebody will always tell you, say, well, that makes you know that it ain't the I've had people tell me things like this. It ain't the whiskey, son. It's bothering you. It's some Coca-Cola's you drank with it. Chemicals. Them old Coca-Cola's is full of chemicals. Tell me all kinds of stories about put a piece of white side meat on a glass and pour it full of Coca-Cola to eat up the white meat. He says, that's what's killing you, so I get off the Coca-Cola. Drink something else. Strawberry. I ain't chasing with strawberry one time. Well, had another fellow tell me, says that blend liquor is killing me. Never drank blend liquor, says it's got chemicals in it. Drank bourbon liquor, says it's pure stuff. So I switched over on bourbon. Now people tell me, says it's them cigarettes. You just smoke cigarettes one right after the other when you drink. Says, leave off the cigarettes. Leave off the cigarettes, wake up the same shit. Drunk. And finally, after so many years, it don't know me that it was the liquor. It wasn't the cigarettes, and it wasn't the strawberry, and it wasn't the cocoa, and it wasn't the blend, and it wasn't the... It was all just pure alcohol. Curtis asked me, said, Debbie, do you want to try AA? I've tried anything in the world right at that time. I'd have volunteered and went to the chain gang. Because I was just dying. And look how he put me there. I said, Curtis, I want to try anything in the world. Anything that you might think would help me, if God says help. I was crying again. I was having another pity party. And I went in the house, and Curtis had filled me so full of good sound and material, you know, about God loves you and don't want you, and says if you'll just go in there and if you'll get out on your knees and pray, you'll get feeling better, and you'll hear the birds chirping tomorrow, and just life will be different, so you'll truly see the beauty of the world again. And I know what he meant now. I went back in that house, and he had me pumped up so full of that stuff, little Joe, I did one awful thing. I handed my wife all the liquor that I had. And I told her, I said, take this liquor and do whatever you want to, and I don't need it no more. Oh, he had me on cloud nine. She poured out my liquor, and in 5 minutes I knew I had played a while. Oh, I was sick. Oh, I walked through that night. I couldn't sleep. I finally lay down and sweat. Now about to go to sleep and then jump that high. Get up and walk and drink a little bit of water. Go back in bed. I already know what I'm talking about. It's been there. And finally, Sunday came. Well, Wednesday night came, and I was too sick. Curtis had told me there wasn't no way that I was going to go to the AA meeting that next night, which was Wednesday. He said, well, Sunday evening we have a closed meeting. I said, won't you try to come? Come to my house and call me. And he was smart. He told me to come to his house and call me. The meeting was in Cambridge, Georgia. He told me just to go straight to that AA meeting room, I wouldn't have never made it. Not then. I might have later, but not that evening. I rode down to Carpet, Georgia, and I rode by Curtis's house to size up the situation before I stopped. And he lived in the worst place in the world as you could live in Carpet, Georgia. Because right here is his house. Right here is the preacher of the First Baptist Church in Carpet. You can hardly spit from one house to another.
And on that side, there's one of the leading deacons in the Baptist church there right here, and the Superior Court judge right in front of the house. And I said, ain't no way to stop that. But I just knew good and well that when I pulled up that stump and started towards Curtis's door, that they was going to all be looking out the window and say, uh-huh, say, hunting helps, that liquor's going to kill you. Just about it. I didn't even admit that. No, sir. But I finally stopped out about the third attempt. Walked up to Curtis's house, he was just nice, Miller's nice man. We walked out to and got in the car and drove down to Bamers, about 20 miles down to Bamers. Took about 30 minutes to drive. Walked up them three door steps to that back of that AA house down in Bamers Street, the biggest high steps I believe I ever took in my life. But when I got in there, I found out how come they were so big and how come they were so high, because they led right up into the land of paradise. Right in the middle of them. Inside those walls, I found the best people. Anywhere on the top side of this earth. They came to me and they put their arms around me and they told me, we're concerned about you, we love you. And they did what they always do to an alcoholic, said, come on back here in the kitchen, let's have a cup of coffee. And I said, what most alcoholics do say in response, I said, no, thank you, I can't drink it, it kind of makes me nervous. But those people were concerned about me, and they didn't care where I had got out of jail yesterday or 2 weeks ago, and by the way, I've been there two or three times. They didn't care where I had a drink 30 minutes ago or 6 days ago. And I said, now, he hasn't got to do that. Say that, I know. And he read the preamble and opened the meeting and handed a piece of paper to somebody, and I said, we read it. And they said, my name's so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic. I said, I'm in a room with a bunch of nuts. Great food. I'm an alcoholic. I heard my daddy say one time he's going to have his throat cut from ear to ear. I thought they were right strange people sitting up there talking about that. Wasn't no way I was going to do it. So I figured that probably I was in the wrong place. But then they began to talk about liquor drinking, and they tell experiences about things that had happened to them in the past, and sit up there and just cackle about it. Everybody said me. I didn't try to smile. But I didn't even want to know I drank. You know, I was sober and doing pretty good then. I wasn't going to tell them folks I had no problem with no booze. And the meeting was over, and we dismissed, and we went back there in the back, and I'll tell you what's true. They led me back there and handed me a saucer and a piece of a coconut cake that is both fit. And he still hung over and shaking, and I said, no, wasn't tempting. I ain't never been much of no sweet either. It won't nothing sweet. Been drinking condensed sugar for about 23 years. That's how come I didn't want nothing sweet. I sure do like sweet things. But I went home that afternoon, and I got home, and my little wife, she said, hey, what about that AA thing? I said, well, it's a pretty good outfit, I think. I said, probably they got something that would help you if you kept going. And she said, well, are you going to go back? I said, I don't know. I got to think about it. I said, I'm scared it might ruin my reputation if I keep going that thing. But you know, all during that meeting, I knew that those people had something that I had never seen before, nowhere. And I knew it was concern for me, and I knew those people loved me. There was just something in that room told me that. And I find it in every AA room, I don't feel where it's at that I go to. But I was sitting there wondering if they were going to let me go. I figured for sure, see, I had done everything that I could get an application to all my life. I was a joiner. And I just figured they was gonna call me about 3 hours back in that back room when that meeting was over and present me with an application to fill out. And I knew that when I got out there where it said list three character references that I wasn't gonna qualify. So that's that hard to do. Hard to do. But they didn't do that. They sat up there and talking about no views or deal. I remember I called one of them off. I said, when did I join this thing? And you don't join. You know, they didn't put me on no trial, man, if they tried out here to see if I was going to do right.
Couldn't have cared less. The worst one was to get on my head, a thousand times moved out of heaven. I went to that meeting, and I went, and I got on cloud nine, and I've been going about 4 weeks, or about 5 weeks, and I slipped up through the chairman down that one night, and I said, when are y'all going to let me read that, how it works? He said, let you read it tonight. You think you read it? I said, yeah. Or do something. I got up there that night, and I turned around and faced that crowd, and I said, I'm going to get Phillip, and I'm just as loud as I can say. I couldn't say that word, no louder than that. And I read how it works. I don't know how many words I mispronounced or what have you. Didn't care less. Scared to death. Knees were shaking. Just jittered all over. And I come down and I felt good. But see, I had done something. I don't ever go to that meeting if I have to talk that I don't do it. If I don't get to do nothing but read how it works, I feel good. Sometimes when I'm at one and I know they ain't gonna ask me to do something, I make like I'm leading the silent meditation. I feel good. So I got through that night and that meeting was over, and I opened up that chair, and I said, when y'all gonna let me tell my story? Ain't going not 5 weeks. Ain't have no story to tell. Ain't have nothing qualified me to do nothing except to spread you to leave. And he said, let you carry that plan tonight. You think you'd be ready? I said, I'll be ready. I went down to that place for now. I made a talk all the next week. I was working in Auburn, Georgia, and it took 45 minutes to ride from my house to Auburn, Georgia. I make one every morning going, and evening coming back. Sound is good. Just knew that when I got down to that Wednesday night, I was just going to throw it with that story. Because I was reading that time to the thing. So I put on the best clothes I had, got the widest tie I could find, up near the knot, and I went down that gate, and I was scared to slam them through the cell. The biggest crowd you ever seen in your life would like come that night. And I was sitting down on that front row, and I couldn't keep my hands still. My legs crossed one way and crossed the other way, just scared to slam to death. And finally, Hugh Johnson was the chairman, and he finally got to the point of introducing me, and he just made a terrible mistake. He felt me up, my head got swelling, and we couldn't strike it unless he could reach me out of here. Standing up for the fire job I was, a fine young man I was, and sometimes it don't take it to us if you don't bring out the contract way. And he finally introduced me, and I went up and I turned around before that crowd, and I said, my name's Doug H. Crook, and I'm an alcoholic. If I didn't say it like that, I'm done. And I told my story. And I mean, I went into that story. I told everything that had ever happened to me from the day I was born to right that minute. And I just knew my time was up, and I pieced up the clock all around the wall, and I've been talking 8 minutes. And didn't have like nothing else I could tell. Growth in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous comes slowly from us. Because you see how the thinking about things in life is so reversed and so wrong that it takes sometimes 20 years to get a man thinking straight back completely. Through this program, we refer to things as growth in this program. And God knows I hope I will never quit growing in the program back out of life. Because if I do, decide that I'm full of growth, like I'm in trouble. But I have some sort of thinking Alcoholism is a mental illness as well as it is an addiction. It's my opinion and my opinion only. And I think sometimes our mental problem is worse off than our addiction. It seems that we can handle our addiction a little bit better if we can do something about our mental problem. Just to make it short, we just pure and be crazy as hell. Anybody that do what I do is crazy. Ain't no other soft word you can say up for. Crazy. The thinking, the type thinking that I do was just literally off base. A man would come by and he'd tell me, says, well, said, you ain't no alcoholic. You just drank a little too fast.
No, you can't. A doctor told me that one time. A medical doctor been through 25 years.
Help me. Supposed to know everything there is to know about a body. And he told me, he said, you just say, you ain't no alcoholic. This is even before I ever considered AA. I asked him the possibilities if I might be an alcoholic. He said, you ain't no alcoholic. He said, your only problem is that I drink liquid, and your only problem is you drink too fast. Go down and drink them. And I had another doctor right there in town one time to show you how little they know, and just an old professional doctor. They just said they don't care nothing about alcoholism. You go to an alcoholic goes to a medical doctor and says, look here, doctor, he ain't gonna tell the doctor the truth. He can go over and say, listen, I'm an alcoholic. Can you do anything for me? He's gonna go in and say, you know, I have a problem with cancer. What if you could give me something that'll settle my nerves down a little bit? And he said, yeah, sure, take this amphetamine. Take one every 4 hours, and what they are, tranquilizers. Ain't no alcoholic gonna take no tranquilizer one every 4 hours. He's gonna take four right off the start, and take four every 1 hour. And doctors and many children folks drink. Sleeping pills, tranquilizers, diet pills, and all that crap. They screw you up worse than ripping their body. But anyway, that's all my opinion. I continued trying to go to trouble and trying to work this program. And I couldn't get a hold to one of the old fine program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was too low. And so you get a hold to some special requirements and get a hold of that special food that they feed us through this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, there ain't no way you're going to get no humility. Unless you got the spiritual part of this program, you ain't going to have the humility that's required to stay sober. Can't have one unless you got them both. The spiritual has to come first. Because I'm a firm believer, I've heard people talking repeatedly, and I do it myself about the spiritual side of this program, but they ain't but one side of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's spiritual. It's spiritual all the way. From Bill Wilson to right now, it's been spiritual. Every step of the way. Totally. No spiritual side of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, that came slow with me, and I began to ask questions, and I began to think. My sponsor got killed, and I began to lean on this a while, and lean on that one a while, and it didn't matter who it was. I'd lean on them and get a little information from them. Old Courtney up there all day one time told me some things that happened. He said, your trouble ain't trying too damn hard. Ain't no hard job to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Study the program. Read what it says. Read. Study. Listen. Pay attention. Keep your mouth shut. Got two ears and one mouth. You can listen twice as much as you talk. I know he told me one time something that hadn't dawned on me. I kept walking around and I wondered when I was going to have that special experience like Bill Wilson had. Like old Paul had on the way to Damascus, you know. And like Bill Wilson said he had in his room in the hospital. Didn't come to me and I felt left out. I wanted that to happen to me. And it's plain old saying I'm about no special experience. 12 chapters just hasn't had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. We try to tell this message of alcoholics, frankly, principal in all of our faith. And I've heard it read 10,000 times, and I had never thought about it. And then you know what you're trying to say. And it tells you the whole program is so far as spiritual, how it comes to pass. Spiritual awakening as a result of what? These 12 steps. And it goes on to tell you what we're trying to do. And then it goes on to tell you, it says, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be disturbed. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect and health. We are not fighting. We have to do a thing. Just be yourself. Stay sober. It's the greatest thing that I ever found. And they told me. Sometimes I get carried away with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just want to get out on the streets and shout that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and that I'm an alcoholic. So, you know, if I hadn't been an alcoholic, I wouldn't know you people. I know some of them, but I wouldn't have known you in the true love, except for loving one, at least loving you like I do, and being loved. It's pretty nice out here. If you can walk into other rooms such as this, and to have been the smallest human being possible, and have good, nice folks who run at you and stick a hand out, pass on the back, even ladies who come up close to that once in a while. Kiss you on the cheek. This just feels good. It's all right. James, and the birthday cake. And I'll let you. And I'll let you. Well, James, I know everyone here is going to go with that. I'm still called Jesus about that old word alcoholic. You remember Ted told me he was alcoholic after a lot of people in the Carnegie Baptist Church. Well, this brings us down to another item on the agenda. I'm going to ask the president of our custody group to come up and give out the cheer, please. Come on.
Hi, dear little Fonz. Happy birthday. I'm not too used to this. I think I've done it once before. We all have some bad issues. In our group, in all groups, we have the shift system. And we have a white shift that we offer anyone who thinks they have a problem. It serves two purposes. If you have a problem, you take our shift. And besides, you got to go out and get drunk. It asks you to call someone first before you take that first drink. But in case you don't, and you do get drunk, we ask you to break it and come back and take another one. And if you can keep this fight ship for 90 days with no drinking, we offer you the rest of it. Ship. And this is sort of a danger to all cities. If you can keep this ship 90 days without a drink, we offer you the blue. And then 90 more days, the amber. And at the end of the year, we give you these gold medallion and birthday cake and coffee. Do you have anybody tonight for a white ship? Red ship, blue ship, and come on up here, guys. I just leave you. And thank God, one day at a time, and I got it. And I wish I could just take each one of them and sit and tell you what to do means in it. Because each one of it means something to me. And while I vote you, and the grace of God is not being tonight. That is for sure. One day at a time. Thanks.
Anybody else got anything they'd like to say?
Yeah, Clayton, didn't I forget to say I am Martha Gibson and I'm an alcoholic? Yeah.
We'll forgive you.
I got one thing I said, my brother. Thank you for my
I want to thank Sarah too for helping Mark with the cake.
Good. Anyone else have anything to say? I want to tell you something about how this program works. My neighbor works from the education department, and that sounds a prophet. He saw this pretty little lady in an office down there. He come back to his cabinet. He said, you know, George down there is a prophet? I said, yeah. I thought he meant somebody from Kentucky. I said, yeah. I said, you know? He said, yeah, I met her down there. I said, well, I said, you're going to ask you to. The next time you see her, you tell her that I still love her. Boy, you talk about eyes and bouncing and going on. He just didn't know about the April. And I said, also, if you see that the age, tell him to tell Doris that I still love her. I'm glad to have Doris in tonight. Let us be reminded of our Crip tradition. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our tradition, ever reminding us to place principles before personality. It is a sacred trust that we respect the anonymity of everyone present at this meeting. The opinions, thoughts, or experiences expressed by speakers or any others are their own and not necessarily those of the ADA as whole. Since we have a human's pastor here with us tonight, I'm going to ask him if he will. Ask Barry to come up and if he has any remarks you'd like to make, we're always glad to hear from members of the clergy, and then close the meeting by leading us in the Lord's Prayer. Will you come, Ashley?
I appreciate the opportunity. I can't say I'm there very often. I'm an alcoholic, but I'll tell you this. Ray might remember that I met him about a year ago in the fall of the hospital. I went with Jim and on the way down there, he said, Lord, I wish you had gone.
Oh!
And to tell you the truth, I thought, hey, you know, sometimes I wish I was too. I've been in several meetings, and one thing I will say from what I have been in is I envied you. You have a love for each other that the church ought to have, and we don't have it. But you have it. And that's why I wish I was gone. But I have found love for the people I knew and others and this hope for the church. If you obey the church's word and give it your love, we have a chance to. I love Jean. I told her a long time ago I have another friend in Thomas who helped me to grow about 4 feet taller in my understanding of alcoholics. I was working with about 3 people at one time, and I run into trouble, and I set off the summer field, and I said, you know, I'll talk to you. And he, all right, this man, you get to wait on a customer, you're going off, and he said, I run back home. Day or two later, I run back down, I walk in the door, he said, just a minute, I'll be here, and we'll talk about it. I told June this, and she said, yep, that's the way it goes. And she said, you're going to have to let me know. I've had to call her a time or two, but she's been a real good friend, and I enjoy being with her, and I love her, and I appreciate her love for me, and I know that she's got a part of future. Thank you for this opportunity. Again, thank you for knowing me, and thank you for your love for me. Let's pray together.